Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and hashtag King Triton did nothing wrong. Joining me today is Devinder Hardwar.
Look how they massacred my boy. Flounder!
And Jeff Cannata.
I wasn't sure we should review this movie, and then I realized that I want to be where the people are.
Those are, of course, all vague and oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast, we're going to be reviewing The Little Mermaid, the newest live-action remake of a Disney animated classic. You can find more episodes of this podcast at thefilmcast.com. Email us at filmcast@gmail.com. Find us on YouTube and Twitter and Instagram at thefilmcastpod. Find us on TikTok at thefilmcast. And if you want to support this podcast, patreon.com/filmpodcast, how you do that. I want to mention that if you are a patron, you are getting this episode significantly early. We are recording this episode before the Memorial Day weekend. And so that's also important for you to know, because if something major happens in the film world during Memorial Day weekend and we don't talk about it, it's not just because we're oblivious. That is merely one of the reasons why we're not talking about it. Right.
Yeah. We're also oblivious.
Exactly right. But yes, if you're a patron at patreon.com/filmpodcast, you're getting this episode early. And if our calculations and plans come true, next week's episode reviewing Across the Spider-Verse will also be delivered early for patrons. So hopefully that all works out. But a huge thanks to our patrons for making this episode possible. Of course, if you're listening on the main free feed, it's still the same show. It's just significantly later. And today, we got a bunch of film news stuff, a bunch of stuff from the world of streaming to deliver to you, some what we've been watching, some weekly plugs, and of course, our main review. One other thing I want to mention about the Patreon, patreon.com/filmpodcast, our After Dark next week will be discussing Barry and Succession, two of the greatest television shows of our era that are coming to an end this weekend, or I guess by the time many of you are listening to this, that just came to an end. That will be our main topics for the After Dark on next week's episode. And of course, you can always access that at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
It's wild that they're both coming to an end, not just seasonally, but
yeah,
the series are coming
series
to an end.
Finales. Yeah. So we'll be doing full spoiler casts, on the After Dark, this week. So let's talk about some of the big film news that's going on, guys. And the biggest thing that's going on, from my perspective, is Netflix's password share apocalypse has finally arrived. We've known for a while now that Netflix is going to stop password sharing between, within family accounts, especially if the family person, like if your family members or your friends live in different locations, Netflix will force them to sign up for a new account. And we got all the details of that this week. And I just want to say, on a personal level, I had to spend 15 minutes explaining to my dad why he needed to get a new Netflix account. So thanks, Netflix. Really, really appreciate that. But no,
really,
I mean,
he really wanted that in-depth explanation, huh?
Well, so yes, Netflix has sent out the emails. Have you guys gotten the email from Netflix?
I don't know. No. Ignore those.
I should check.
Yeah,
because my wife's grandmother is on our account, so now I don't know what's going to happen.
Right, yeah. So Netflix sent out an email, subject line, an update on sharing between households. And it says, your Netflix account is for you and the people you live with, your household. You can easily watch Netflix on the go when you travel. But then it explains, like, hey, if you want to share Netflix with someone outside your household, you can use these features. You can transfer a profile, or you can buy an extra member. That's how you do it now. Now, I had to look at what an extra member was. And I have to say, we have said on this podcast, fully support people paying for the stuff that they're consuming. Like, if you're a heavy user of Netflix, you should pay for your own account. Like, I don't have any qualms about that. I feel like that is a reasonable thing for a company to expect of anyone. But I have to say that the way that they're making this transition is not easy. So transfer a profile, like if there's someone on your account, you can, like, they can take their account and transfer it to a new account, like a new profile, or the other way around. They can take a profile on your account, transfer it to a new account.
Yes.
And that's what I did with my dad is you have to go into your account, enable profile transfers, and then enter in a new email and password for the new account. That's basically,
I mean, alternatively, works, right? Could you still keep, like, create the account for him, basically, and still keep him under your thing, but you chose not to do that?
Well, okay, so one way is you transfer someone to a new account. That's what I said, right? The other way is buying an extra member.
Yeah. So you looked at your father in the eyes, like the father who raised you and paid for everything. He's like, I cannot have you on this Netflix account anymore. It's going to cost me an extra $10-$15 a month, right?
That is not true. Okay. Let me explain.
Never made eye contact at any point.
that's the net result is what you described, but that's not the thought process. Okay. So an extra member now for Netflix costs $8 per month. So that's a lot. Like, it's not like a $3 to $4 surcharge. It's like basically a whole ass new account pretty much. Mm-hmm. And I'm totally willing. And by the way, I offered to pay for my dad's new account too. Like, not even just extra member. I was like, if you want us to pay for your new account, that's fine. But he was too prideful to accept that. I was willing to pay for my dad to be an extra member. The problem with extra members is extra members come with a bunch of constraints.
Yeah.
So if you're an extra member, you can basically only use Netflix on one account at one device at a time, is my understanding. You can only download to one device at a time. And they cannot create their own profiles, and they do not have access to the kids' profile, which is a Netflix feature. So it comes with a lot of restraints, basically, like a lot of like restrictions. And my dad and my mom watch different Netflix shows, and they have multiple devices in their house, so it just didn't make sense to add my dad as an extra member.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Instead, they're going to have their own Netflix household. But I am surprised by how unappealing the extra member feature is. And they're basically just going to force people to start new accounts, which is totally within their right, but they're not easing this transition. They're not like making it super smooth from my perspective. And I am curious, like, how do you guys think you're going to approach this? Like, sharing Netflix. Like, do you think you're going to get your family members new accounts? Like,
I probably will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's probably the easiest thing.
You said your grandmother uses it. You said your grandmother uses
it. My wife's grandmother is using our account. So she has a profile and everything. I haven't gotten any emails about that yet. So I have to see.
Right now, I do have an
email
from.
Yeah. I have a Netflix email saying my household has been confirmed. And it lists a set of devices. I'm like, okay, yeah, those look like devices using Netflix. Okay. The problem for Netflix, and we talked about this before, is that they let this go on for too long.
Yeah.
And they even promoted the idea of sharing because really it was the reach that they wanted more than the revenue per user. And now to do this about face is, it's going to be tough. And they're probably going to lose a lot of users for this too.
They are betting that they are going to gain more subscribers and they're going to lose because of the inconvenience.
Right.
Like, they're going to gain more new accounts because more than they lose. We'll see if it pays off. I think they've tried this in Canada and it has worked. So their gambit has worked in Canada, but I think this is really going to piss a lot of people off. And I have to say, like, yeah, I think the way the extra members work is not appealing. It's not a great feature. Now, if it's your grandmother, Devendra, and it's just them and they're using Netflix occasionally, it's probably fine. My parents are both power users of Netflix, guys. Okay. they consume like one new show a week. All right. So I can't have them being extra member. How about you, Jeff Cannata? How are you going to handle this Netflix password sharing situation?
I mean, this doesn't really apply to me. I don't share an account with anybody outside my household, so it doesn't apply.
Well, we are curious to see any interesting and fun stories you might have of household accounts. I do want to point out that the way they are identifying who's in the household is using a combination of IP addresses and device IDs and activity. They are not using GPS coordinates. That's something that people have been wondering. They're not using GPS, but they are using those features. I am really curious how annoying this is going to be for people who travel, for people who split their time between two locations, for military people who move around. Like, I'm curious like how this is all going to play out, you know, whether it's going to be a bit of a mess or not, but curious to hear what people think about this at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Best of luck to you in the Netflix household wars to come. So speaking of streaming catastrophes, Max launched this week, guys. Max,
what a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one everyone's been waiting for, Max, your friend.
Yeah.
I mean, what's been great?
In solidarity, we've decided to change the name of our show to The Cast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just Cast, actually, cleaner that way. But
Cast.
Yeah, and I should, by the time many of you are listening to this, it'll have been a week or so since Max launched.
Actually, wait a minute. We already did it. They're following our lead. We already dropped the first word of our title.
It's so true. It's so true, Jeff. But yeah, Max launched, and Not a smooth rollout, from what I can tell. I don't know if you guys experienced this, but first of all, I just always assumed that the HBO Max app would just transform into Max. That's what happened for me.
Yeah, I think so. I've talked to Netflix or HBO before, and they said depending on the platform.
So some platforms can do that,
but some can't.
I'm on Roku, and it was as smooth as could possibly be. It was like, Roku, hey, tomorrow we're going to be Max. It like had a splash page. It's like, hey, tomorrow we're going to be Max. And then the next day it was Max, and I just kept watching my shows and it was no different.
iOS and Apple TV, you had to get something
on
new.
On Apple TV, I had to download a whole ass new app, Jeff Cadana.
But it did carry over your credentials, didn't
it? That's true. When I downloaded the new Max app, I just opened it up and it did have all my stuff. So that was
reason. It was a 10, 15 second inconvenience in your life. And is it working fine? How's it going?
Well, I will say the new Max app on tvOS is considerably shittier than HBO.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, they're using their own like proprietary video, or not proprietary, but like they're using a different video player than the tvOS player. And so it's much more difficult to navigate from my perspective.
Honestly, the HBO Max player was always a disaster for me. Like just fast forwarding something and getting back to a point.
Welcome back to that times, in my opinion.
Okay.
But and
reason number 57 why you don't want to use the Apple TV. I hate that thing.
No, it's great. I'm sorry, Jeff.
Yeah. A lot of outages. We heard like a lot of outages and like people experiencing difficulty logging in. But at the end of the day, I don't think any of that is really going to leave a lasting impact.
I think it's fine.
Many apps have weird launches and it ends up being fine. Here's what might though is. So if you go into Max and you go into like a movie, like Goodfellas or something like that, usually you would see who worked on the movie listed by what they did for the movie: director, writer, producer, executive producer. You might see that on the info page of your favorite streaming app. Well, Max created some consternation this week by bunching all of those people into a tab or a section called creators.
Right. Like a psychopath, by the way. Like who thinks of anything like that?
So and specifically, it did not distinguish between like writers and directors.
Yes. Right? Or producers.
Or producers.
They're just all in the same thing.
They all created. They're creating.
They all created. Yeah.
It just bucketed all those
services,
people.
Creators, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, yes, Jeff, everyone contributes to the final work. But in this case, this is clearly against guild policies. Mm-hmm. And I just have to point out, this is an extremely delicate time in Hollywood right now.
This is a really dumb, like, this is a cell phone. This is just like, you just literally just did what you were doing before, you idiots. It's all you had to do. I don't know where this thing came from. This is changing, by the way. You saw that statement.
I'm going to get into it. But we are in a very delicate time in Hollywood right now. The Writers Guild is on strike, in a strike that has lasted for weeks and has no end in sight. Notably, the DGA and SAG, I think their contracts are up for renewal June 30th. And there's been a huge question as to whether the DGA will join the WGA in the strike. Because if that happens, if SAG and DGA and WGA all strike, you know, Jeff, you were talking about how the town shut down when the writers struck in, 15 years ago. This would be even beyond that. Like, it would be unprecedented.
Yeah,
like,
true. It's going to be.
There's no, you can't even do reality shows, right? You can't do anything.
Animation, anything. Right.
So there's been a huge question as to whether or not the directors will join the writers in the strike, you know, because if the writers are on strike, it kind of gives the directors more leverage, right? Like they have a little bit more bargaining power. Leave it to David Zaslav and Warner Media for giving the writers and the directors a reason to band together. And,
the week after he was booed by the entire Boston University College graduating class. Yeah.
Incredible.
He's on a roll. Zaslav hits one after another.
Leslie Linka Glatter, who is the DGA president, says, quote, "For almost 90 years, the Directors Guild has fought fiercely to protect the credit and recognition deserved by directors for the work they create. Warner Brothers Discovery's unilateral move, without notice or consultation, to collapse directors, writers, and producers and others into a generic category of creators in their new Max rollout, while we are in negotiations with them, is a grave insult to our members and our union."
Look, actually, I see the category change now. Looks like it's just now shitheads. Like now, it just changed. Wow.
That is what David Zaslav thinks about writers and directors, apparently.
I mean, this is the same company that was also like, hey, by the way, your movies are on our service day and date now.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
No, no explanation, no negotiation. Yeah.
The dipshits we have to pay. That's funny.
Yeah. So it would be hilarious if David Zaslav's Max launched caused the DGA to strike. As a result, like it's rare to see DGA and WGA solidarity, but they both issued statements about this.
To be fair, there's been a lot of DGA members that have been on the picket lines with WGA.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. This moment, I mean, there's been a lot of solidarity.
A lot of SAG members as well. A lot of SAG members.
Yes. So, yeah, oh my gosh. So many. Many of my friends have been on the picket lines.
It's possible it would have happened anyway. It's possible like they might strike anyway in solidarity.
I don't think there was any chance of it not happening, honestly. Yeah. Fair enough. Everybody's been on the same page in a way that they haven't been in the past. Yeah.
Indeed. Well, for its part, Max said the following, quote, "We agree that the talent behind the content on Max deserve their work to be properly recognized. We will correct the credits, which were altered due to an oversight in the technical transition from HBO Max to Max, and we apologize for the mistake," end quote. Now,
there was some dude sitting in the data entry thing who was like, ugh, how many fields do I have to, let's just put them all into one field. Yeah. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Move this, copy paste this database. What could go wrong? Except that would have been the better thing to do. Seems like they like transferred that information through something else. By the way, stop calling things content, you idiots. It's not content.
Absolutely.
Like these are creative works. Yeah.
A lot of people rightfully called out that statement was complete bullshit. Like there is no way it is a technical, like an oversight in the technical transition. That's what they wanted to make it seem like a technical mistake. Mm-hmm. Somebody had to create a bucket called creators. Somebody had to sign off on that bucket being created. Somebody had to decide that they are not going to.
It's an essential element of this redesign. Like it is not, it's unmissable.
Yeah. So. I don't know if you guys know how computers work.
With all these fancy silicon chips and such.
When you're making a new app, there's a lot of things that can go wrong.
Indeed. And, really? You don't say, Jeffrey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're trying to put all the movies, you're trying to take off the HBO part of Max, and you're trying to stick all the movies into the funnel that gets them into the new app, and sometimes they don't fit the same size, so you got to shave off some words like director and writer, you know? That works.
It is fascinating. Like, I'm actually shocked they put that statement out because I'm guessing it's probably a lie. Like, I'm guessing it's legally not true. And so, like, you don't, in general, you don't want to make false statements. But I think they probably met with a lawyer and they're like, yeah, it's technically an oversight in the technical transition. So but it's like, that's not, you know, spirit of the law, not letter of the law. It's complete BS. But yes, we are glad that writers, directors, and producers will get the proper credit. And that all content is not just, you know, one big bucket where you can lump everyone into the same creator category. So bad times in the streaming world these days, guys.
A lot of these problems started when we started calling everything content, by the way. Like, what a garbage term for just like stuff you push into your eyeballs that doesn't have any artistic merit. That's all it is. It's just garbage in your eyes. That's content. I hate it.
I mean, we are making some now.
We're making quality critical analysis, Jeff Cannata. Okay.
Well, speaking of the devaluation of art, 76 titles are being removed from Disney Plus and Hulu. And this, I think, as of the time you're listening, this has already happened. We saw this happen with HBO Max and Warner, and we're like, hey, that was upsetting and weird that Westworld, one of HBO's defining shows, is no longer in HBO Max. That's weird. Isn't it? Hopefully that doesn't happen again, but no, it's happening. 76 shows are being removed. One of the big ones being Willow, Why the Last Man. You know, these are some major shows that had millions of dollars of marketing behind them that are just being removed, presumably for cost-saving purposes.
Willow's a tough one, too, because I'm sure a lot of people are like, I'll get to that eventually, except now you can't.
Except you won't. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been heartbreaking to see people's social posts saying like, hey, I spent, you know, 3 years of my life working on the show, and now it is literally impossible to buy or stream anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And the creators don't usually get like physical media to take home.
Exactly.
Either, so yeah, you have to beg people for that.
It sucks. We're just in such a weird time where like the promise of streaming has melted down in so many ways, not just financially, but also like the dream is, hey, everything available all the time. And now it's stuff, dozens of titles just getting annihilated with virtually no notice.
Like sheer capriciousness too. Like no rhyme, no reason. I'm sure there are
no seeming, rhyme or reason that's communicated clearly to us.
It's like whatever.
By
the way, that Why the Last Man show, we did talk about it a bit. I think that is worth a watch. So if you want to check it out before it goes, you probably should.
I think by the time you're listening to this, it will be literally impossible to watch it.
It will be gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are other ways to watch things. And if these companies want to make it impossible to watch things, what do you think is going to start happening again? And we're actually already seeing the rise of piracy and things coming back where... I don't know. Maybe if you have some moral feelings about that, when these things disappear entirely, I don't see the problem with just like getting your own copy of it, you know,
because there's no way to, you cannot purchase them. There's no way to access it. And basically accessing it, I cannot condone, you know, officially or legally condone piracy. We are not a legal podcast. Do not
take
any content. Legal
advice. We're not lawyers.
We're just content. Do not take
content
any legal advice from us.
That's all we are.
But I do think that that pirates who hold on to this material are serving a cultural purpose because they're allowing this material to be preserved that people put a lot of work into.
I cannot comment on the legitimacy of piracy, but some may say they're doing the Lord's work. So
some may. You know, a bummer for me, The Princess. I don't think we ever reviewed that movie. I talked about it on the podcast.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fun action movie starring Joey King. That's going to be gone. There is a Right Stuff series that's going to be gone. So many titles just lost. I'm sure they will show up in other places.
Like, isn't Westworld going to Roku?
Yeah,
like Roku's just getting the leftovers.
So like the reason they're vanishing is so they can license, like many of these titles will be licensed to other places and they can make money that way, but some of them won't be, and that's a bummer. So
if you have a chance, people, to actually buy these things, we've talked about this before, but Station 11 is out there. It's on Blu-ray, it's on 4K Blu-ray. Go buy it and tell people, you know, tell these companies that you actually want these things and cherish them.
Absolutely. All right, those are some bits of film and streaming news. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with more what we're watching right after this.
Hey, it's time for me to jump in here and tell you about our sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. We've got multiple trees from Fast Growing Trees at my house growing fast as we speak. It's actually quite awesome because my kids were so delighted when the fast-growing trees arrived on our doorstep that they've adopted them. They've given them names. My daughter named one of our trees Mr. Puppy Paws and the other one Zsa Zsa. And they have taken to watering them and taking care of them. It's a delight. And you, too, can breathe some life into your own backyard with fastgrowingtrees.com this spring. Fastgrowingtrees.com's plant experts curate thousands of easy-to-grow plant, shrub, and tree varietals for your unique climate. This is huge for us because we just moved to Colorado. I don't understand this environment. It's the first time I've ever had weather. So we wanted to get trees that would thrive here. And it's hard to know which plants will do best, but that is not a problem with fast-growing trees because with fastgrowingtrees.com, you get customized recommendations based on your specific needs. Plus, their plant experts are always available to help keep your plants growing healthy throughout the season and beyond. No more waiting in lines and hauling heavy plants around. With fastgrowingtrees.com, you order online and your plants arrive at your door in just a few days. I told you, it was amazing. My kids are like, trees on the doorstep? On the front doorstep? Amazing. Yeah, it was incredible. And I got a little worried, honestly, because my kids got attached to them. They named them. And I thought, I will probably not be able to keep these alive. But with Fast Growing Trees 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, you know everything will look great fresh out of the box. So join over 1.5 million happy Fast Growing Trees customers. Go to fastgrowingtrees.com/filmcast now to get 15% off your entire order. Get 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com/filmcast.
All right, folks, let's get to what we've been watching. I want to mention a couple things I've been watching this week. I want to start with a little bit of a more obscure movie. This one's called Matter Out of Place. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this movie. Probably not. It debuted at a bunch of film festivals like IDFA and VNL.
It sounds like vaguely familiar. Yeah.
It will be out on DVD and digital on June 27th, 2023. So in about a month, and I'll just give a very quick shout out to this movie. It's directed by Nicholas Gerhalter. And this is a movie about garbage. The entire movie is about garbage. Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen like Koyaanisqatsi, Samsara?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
so it's kind of in that vein. There's virtually no dialogue in the whole movie. It's just shots of garbage around the world and how human beings dispose of garbage around the world. And I think there's many shots in this movie that are visually arresting and very, very beautiful and haunting and upsetting. And if you want, and there's no context, there's no narration, there's no talking heads. It's just beautifully composed shots of garbage that's like lasts for an hour and 40 minutes.
And then the last shot is the director's neighbor. He's like, got you, Phil. You're garbage too.
One of the things that is interesting about this is like it goes around the world. It's like goes to Greece and it goes to, you know, Sweden and it goes to other countries. And it shows how all these different places dispose of their garbage. And the one thing that is common through all of these places is human beings don't like looking at garbage. Like all society, they figure out a way to get the garbage in trucks, in boats, whatever, out of sight. And
yeah. I mean, it's also a public health thing too.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
To get but it far away. Yeah.
But I think it's just fascinating. Like, and people do it in different ways. You know, some people burn it. Some people put it in huge dumps. Some people dump it into the ocean. You're like, but you just get, you're just impressed by the scale of how much garbage humans produce.
Yeah.
It's really kind of amazing in many ways. Now, for a movie that has no dialogue, like in my opinion, every single shot needs to be a banger. Do you know what I mean? Like if you watch Samsara or Koyaanisqatsi, mm-hmm. like every single shot needs to be a banger. I don't quite think this movie hits that. I think probably like 78 to 80% of the shots are incredible.
You're saying some of the shots of garbage are garbage?
No, I wouldn't go that far, but I think that you need to really do a lot to engage people's attention if you have no dialogue or narration in your movie. So I do wish that the editing had been tightened up a little bit. But other than that, if you want to watch 100 minutes of shots of garbage, Matter Out of Place.
Has there ever been a more Dave Chen movie of all time? Like, come on.
Yeah, I this is right up my alley. So.
Spend your time staring at garbage.
Matter Out of Place will be on DVD and digital on June 27th. It will be on Ovid on June 14th. Devinder Hardware, what is one thing you have been watching this week?
Pretty much just one thing I want to talk about. My daughter has started watching Strange World, that Disney movie that came out last year and just kind of disappeared.
Jeff Cannata talked about this a few months ago.
Yeah. I recall. It is funny to watch this movie the same week we're reviewing The Little Mermaid. Because this movie just feels like, hey, I've seen this movie before. I've definitely seen this movie, this Disney movie before. And it's kind of, it is kind of funny. So it's like, it is a perfectly fine family adventure film from Disney, co-directed by Don Hall, who did, Moana, I believe, and a whole bunch of other things. And Chi Nguyen. And it's about a family of adventurers. They go on a big adventure. There are life lessons learned. There are, you know, people who were long lost who reconnect and they learn to understand each other by the end. And it is weird how it just feels like, this movie is just like every Disney movie. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it. I think it's perfectly fine, but I think it's also, it's no surprise it hasn't had like a lasting cultural conversation or anything because, man, have we seen this movie again and again. And I feel kind of bad because I think the designs of it, of the like alien-like world that they have and some of the creatures are all really cool. And the animation is really good. And the cast is great. Jake Gyllenhaal's in this. Jabuki Young White's in this. I think it's perfectly serviceable. But man, does it feel like we've seen this movie before. And that's just kind of a shame. I feel like you got to do a little more. I forget what your exact takeaway of it was, Jeff.
But pretty much that.
Okay. Yeah, agreed.
That.
Agreed.
It's completely fine. It's completely fine.
It's actually a very pretty movie.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. But
kind of the same concept of Quantumania, but since you don't have to like bring in live action and everything, like I think it is far more inventive and creative than that movie. Yeah.
Well, that is Strange World. And did you watch it on Disney Plus, Devendra? Or
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
And, as long as it's there. I don't know anymore.
Indeed. Jeff Kanata, hit us with something you've been watching this week.
I checked out a new series on Apple TV Plus. It's called Platonic. It stars Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen. And this is the creative team behind the Forgetting Sarah Marshall movie, which is an old favorite of mine. Yeah. And particularly Francesca Del Banco, who made a show that is woefully underrated that my wife and I really loved. And I believe I talked about it a number of times on the show called Friends from College.
Mm-hmm. I think you have mentioned that, yeah.
Oh, man. It's not on anymore, but I think there's like two seasons of that show. Oh, nobody talks about it. Very fun show.
Yeah, on Netflix, Friends from College, yep.
Yeah. Anyway, Platonic is the new show from that team. And I love the concept of this show. It's really a kind of a corner of, it lives in the kind of rom-com-y place, but it's no rom. It's all com. The idea is, can you imagine a rom-com with no rom? The idea here is that Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen were friends many years ago and haven't really, and now they both got married and Rose Byrne has three kids and Seth Rogen has just got divorced as the.
This is not in the Neighbors universe, by the way.
No, it's not.
It's kind of funny.
It's okay. Not.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
They also, the creators like were, you know, I think Nicholas Stoller.
Yeah. Know, he directed that too. Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. This happens. Yeah.
Anyway. So they were friends. They were like buddies in like college, post-college. And then Seth Rogen's character marries someone that Rose Byrne's character disliked intensely. And so they kind of stopped talking to each other. And at the beginning of the series, he's getting a divorce from this woman. And so Roseburn's like, oh, I'll reach back out and strike up a friendship. And the whole concept of this show is like adult people in their 40s who have children or are married. They're not a man and a woman aren't friends. Like you don't have male, female friendships. The whole concept is like we have married couple friends and the men hang out and the women hang out. And there's not like a man and woman who are just have a platonic friendship that is not romantic in any way. There's just you've moved past that part of your life where you can have those. Like you're in a different phase
of
life.
Is that explicitly stated in the show?
Explicitly stated. Literally, that exact sentence is said. You're in a new phase of life. We don't have those kinds of relationships anymore. Because I knew you're going to get mad at me for having that opinion. I felt like there was a lot of anger in that, Dave.
No, there was no anger. I'm just trying to understand what is the show and what is Jeff's editorializing.
No editorializing.
I'm also sure there are a lot of people who disagree with that premise in the audience listening right now. So, but anyway.
I think it strikes pretty true.
Yeah. Anyway, the show is very funny. And I love the dynamic. I mean, there's a lot of chemistry between Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen. Obviously, they've worked together many, many times. And it seems like they're friends in real life. And so much of the show plays against your expectation so much. You know, they reference Harry Met Sally, you know, when Harry Met Sally, which the premise of When Harry Met Sally is men and women can't be friends. You know, there's always an attraction. And at the beginning of the show, Seth Rogen's like, when Harry Met Sally, it's about the fact that men and women can't be friends. And his friends are like, no, at the end, they get together. They fall in love. They prove that you can't. Anyway, it's very funny because this show is committed to this notion that there's absolutely no romantic connection, or at least, you know, in the first three episodes that I've watched. Mm-hmm. But I'm fairly certain that's the whole idea here. The show is called Platonic, and it's literally, there's no romantic anything between these two characters. They're just friends and they're very funny together. And you know, there's wonderful scenes. Like when they reconnect, like it's messy and weird and they kind of butt heads and it's not just happy fun times all the time. It's really interesting and really funny. I mean, I, I'm, I'm enjoying this very, very much. I think this is kind of my wife and I's new half-hour comedy go-to, you know?
Nice,
And it's on Apple TV Plus, which means it's coming out week to week. I think they released the first three in a chunk, and then it'll be week to week releases on Wednesdays. And we're in, man. I've laughed a lot watching it, and it's just delightful to watch charming people in fun situations.
Yeah, that's the whole premise. It's just like these two people are platonic friends, and that's it.
Yeah, he's like getting over a divorce and reconnecting with her, and they're trying to, you know, reconnect, and then they sort of get into goofy adventures every episode, you know?
It's basically Fleischman's in Trouble, except funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not soul-crushing.
Not existentially depressing.
Yes.
Okay.
But well, that sounds like fun.
It's
platonic.
Great. It's really, platonic, really good. And, you know, they're so good. Rose Byrne's very funny. And there's like this whole dynamic of her. I mean, it resonates a lot with my wife and I in our phase of life because, you know, there's a whole side thing with her and her female friend who are both moms and dropping their kids off at school and like dealing with being moms in their 40s. And it's very much our lives, you know, so it resonates a lot with our phase of life as well. And sort of dealing with all those dynamics in a very honest, but funny way, self-deprecating way.
Very cool. It's Platonic on Apple TV Plus. I will just mention one other thing I have been watching. There is a new show on Netflix called FUBAR that stars Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You would think that an Arnold Schwarzenegger show would be a big deal, but I have seen not one bit of marketing about this show. I don't know about
there. It's all over Twitter. There's a lot of
first
Arnold
time
stuff.
Hearing of it. Yeah. I wasn't even aware of this.
Yeah. He's like the action ambassador for Netflix, basically.
I'm very excited. Is it good?
It is completely fine. I'm actually more excited about the Arnold Schwarzenegger documentary that's coming out on Netflix in a few weeks. It's like a 3-part documentary about Arnold's life. That seems like it's going to be must watch for me. FUBAR has an extremely similar premise to True Lies. I will say what the premise is. Okay, you find out basically what happens in the first 30 minutes, and also the title of the first episode kind of talks about what the premise is. But basically, Arnold Schwarzenegger is a spy, and he has worked for, you know, the CIA for years, and he is on a mission. What are they called? Assignment, you know. And he discovers that one of his family members is also in the CIA, and they a series of reckonings about, you know, how they've been lying to each other and how their family members, they have to care for each other, ensues. Here's the question that you need to ask yourself, right? Like, why do you watch Arnold Schwarzenegger movies? What is it about Arnold Schwarzenegger movies that appeal to you? Because for me, a huge part of the appeal of Arnold was his physically imposing presence. Like, that was a big aspect to me. And just like seeing this machine of a man, literally, in Terminator, like what he's able to do. I remember Terminator 2, Judgment Day. I believe, you know, there's a scene where Arnold Schwarzenegger picks up or the T-800 picks up a chain gun while at Skynet and like repels police officers. And I remember
reading.
Does it
non-lethally to
you?
Yeah,
non-lethally.
You
that's right. It was amazing. And I remember reading he was the only person on set that could carry that gun by himself.
Those muscles aren't just for show.
Exactly. He's amazing.
It's on stage work. Muscles.
Yeah.
Listen, I go to Arnold Schwarzenegger movies too, Dave, because he is funny. He can be funny. I was there, loving Last Action Hero when that movie came out, and a lot of people crapped on it, and now it's getting a kind of like resurgence, and people are like finding like, oh yeah, it was actually pretty smart. It wasn't perfect.
Last Action Hero has been a weird experience because I always loved that movie. When I saw that as a kid, like I was like, this is amazing. And then hearing that some people didn't like it, I'm like, what? Like I never got it.
What is Jeff's perspective?
I never got it. Yeah, Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah.
I agree. But I think that it's one of those weird phenomenon where everybody remembers liking it, but it tanked on the, you know, yes. Somehow it was a complete disaster, but everybody I know loved it. Like all the kids that went to see it at that time loved it, but it was just like adults were like, what is this garbage movie?
Mm-hmm. It came out around the time as Jurassic Park, I want to say, or like
it was ahead of its time.
Jurassic Park 1 or 2. I've always loved that movie.
But it was so meta and so weird. Mm-hmm. And I think it just, like you said, Devendra, ahead of its time in the sense that everything that our generation loves is sort of meta and self-reflexive and like about media as a thing. Yeah. And I think our parents' generation was just not on that page at all.
Mm. It's just weird. Maybe as a comedy, right? Because RoboCop and Verhoeven did that quite often in his works, but not as directly as Last Action Hero, you're walking through the
Blockbuster video and you see the Sylvester Stallone standee and it's like
that's an amazing
blew my mind in movie history,
like the idea that they thought up like, okay, what would an alternate universe Terminator 2 look like? Sylvester Stallone would be, of course, because he and Arnold were huge competitors. In the 80s and 90s.
Well, also, they were didn't they always, like, give each other shit all the time, too? Yes. Like, there was a big rivalry. By the way, now that we're talking about Arnold, the Conan O'Brien podcast, they're doing a live reading of the Lost Hans and Franz movie. Mm. And is a lot of fun. Because Dana Carvey's on there. Kevin Nealon's on there. You know, like, the idea that they wrote this movie, which has a huge like role for Arnold Schwarzenegger, for the real Arnold to be in it. It's a wonder it was never made. But it was apparently like one of the things that he was working on or considering before Last Action Hero. Go listen to that because it's a lot of fun. Who plays Arnold? I think it's Triumph guy.
Oh yeah.
Robert Smigel.
Yeah, Smigel's there too because he co-wrote it. So it's a lot of fun if you like 90s era stuff. Yeah.
Oh, I'm in.
So I agree with you that Last Action Hero really shows off Arnold Schwarzenegger's comedic chops.
Mm-hmm. Kindergarten Cop?
Oh, yeah.
It's not a tumor?
It's not a tumor.
Yeah.
Who is your daddy and what does he do?
I think FUBAR, the Netflix original series, is like a completely fine sitcom, basically. It's like each episode's 1 hour long, but it's kind of a sitcom where, you know, this father and his one of his family members get into this really weird, outrageous situation. But the action is pretty rough. It's very obvious that it's not Arnold Schwarzenegger doing it. You know what I mean? Like, when you're watching John Wick Chapter 4, it's very obvious it's Keanu Reeves doing a lot of that stuff. You can see his face. Action takes place in like single continuous shots. Not the case of FUBAR. It's tons of cutting, tons of you're seeing him from behind the back of his head, very few continuous shots. And so if you're not watching Arnold doing the action, then what's left is Arnold's charm and his comedic skills. And they are considerable. I think he's a wonderful, charismatic screen presence. But I was, and he's obviously getting on in years, and I don't expect people to kind of be like Tom Cruise into their 60s or anything like that. But as a result, like the show's pleasures are a little bit more limited for me. I will say the cast is amazing. Monica Barbaro, who plays Phoenix in Top Gun Maverick, I thought she was amazing in that movie. I haven't seen her in a lot of other stuff. She's in this movie playing Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter. Jay Baruchel shows up in the first episode. So there's some really amazing cast in the show, but it's pretty disposable entertainment. But hey, you know, if it's like, maybe that's what some people are looking for. If you're like, hey, I just want something to put on in the background while I'm cooking dinner, this is actually a perfect option for that.
You know what is an Arnold movie that needs a reckoning? And we actually reviewed it. The Last Stand, the Kim Ji-woon movie, which I think got kind of like middling reviews at the time. But man, I liked it then. It was such like a throwback to old school Arnold action. I need to rewatch that movie.
I definitely prefer The Last Stand to FUBAR. But I didn't love it. You know, we reviewed it, as you said. I would be open to a reconsideration of that. But
I think more because like, and also Kim Ji-woon like brought some really creative stuff to that movie. So yeah, it was fun.
But yeah, if you're looking for, hey, this is not like Jeff, you've said sometimes at the end of the day, you're really tired. You just want to put something on that's not taxing. It's perfectly pleasant. I think FUBAR on Netflix actually falls into that category. So
there is a True Lies show now too. Yeah,
it's okay. You know, it's okay.
I mean, it's trying to be funny though.
I think I chuckled like once or twice during the first episode.
But I mean, it's attempting to be comedic.
Yes, it is attempting to be comedic, and it's extremely similar in plot and theme to True Lies, just James Cameron's not directing it. You know what I'm saying?
It is the next Netflixified True Lies, basically.
Oh, yes.
It's kind of like the Red Notice stuff. Yeah.
True Lies got the Red Notice treatment, and the result is FUBAR. So anyway, that's FUBAR. It's a show on Netflix. That is what we've been watching this week. Let's take a break for another sponsor. We'll be right back with more The Filmcast right after this. All right, folks, let's get to weekly plugs. We're going to do weekly plugs. Weekly plugs. Weekly Plug is a part of the show each week where we plug something else we've been making. With Succession having just wrapped up, or about to wrap up, depending on when you're listening to this, I decided to take a look at the life of Logan Roy and extract 5 business lessons from his life. You can find those at...
Because he's a role model that we should all look up to.
Absolutely, you should emulate everything that Logan Roy does in the show Succession.
Yeah, so the life of success, you know.
So because of that, you should definitely check out my article at decodingeverything.com, 5 business lessons from Logan Roy. It's my free newsletter, and you can find it at decodingeverything.com. So that's my weekly plug. Even your hardware, your weekly plug.
Sure. I want people to check out the latest episode of the Engadget podcast. I talked to Mr. Panos Panay, the chief product officer at Microsoft. You're wooing because people in the tech world know who he is. He was Mr. Surface for a very long time.
Yeah. I worked at Microsoft while he was, while he came out with Surface, and you know, he's a legend at the company. I, you know, here's my fanboy moment, Devinder. When he unveiled, like, I don't remember, I think the Surface 3 or something like that, and, or Surface Pro 3. And I sent him an email and I was like, "Hey, I thought you did a great job today." And he said, "Thanks." That was
from my assistant. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my brush with Panos Panay fame over at the old Microsoft. Indeed. Yeah.
So he is a guy who's deeply committed to his tech, and we talked about Windows Copilot, which is this thing they're doing. They're bringing the AI stuff, the Bing AI stuff, right into Windows. Could be interesting, could be exciting. I also foresee some problems. So we have a good chat about, like, you know, the potential for it to change Windows, but also a lot of misinformation, a lot of weirdness happening with AI that I don't think Microsoft is fully prepared for. And I asked him some questions about that. So check out our interview on the Engadget podcast.
There is a scene that I always remember from Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, where Scotty sits down at a 1980s era PC and picks up the mouse and talks into it and says, "Hello, computer. We are now..." I've lived long enough where that's going to be, it was funny, because look, people from the future think you could just talk to a computer and ask it to do things instead of...
Before you get too excited, Jeff, you're not talking to this. You're typing to it.
We're going there, dude. It's happening.
It's happening. But no, we had Cortana. We had all these things for a while, and Cortana died. They killed Cortana because it was doing so badly. So, you know, maybe there's a resurgence of bringing those assistants back with AI and making them better. Because I do want to talk to my computer. I want to say, "Hey, like, as I'm working on stuff, I want to, like, edit this podcast, please. Like, just do it, please." Yeah.
I think that every week. Jeff Cannata, your weekly plug.
Last week, I announced in this very segment, my fundraising efforts for the this run that I'm doing in August, and people responded so beautifully. This is Hood to Coast. I'm running from Mount Hood to the coast. I'm raising money for Providence Cancer Institute, and it is going to be a 48 hour nonstop race where I'm running with a group of 11 other people. I'm running with the Eastmoreland Fathers Association, it's intense. I'm going to be running quite a long distance, but I'm doing it not just because I hate myself. I'm doing it also to raise money for the Providence Cancer Institute. And I told everybody my easy to remember vanity URL.
Providence, you're publicly shamed. Yes.
And you know what, guys? As of this recording, we've gotten quite a number of people that figured that out, listened closely enough that they actually donated.
I also put the link in the show notes, so that might have been how.
Mostly probably because they listened to me.
Just hand by hand typed out that URL.
Thing that I said, all the effort that I put in. As of right now, my goal is to raise $12,000 before we run. We're at $2,393 at this moment. That's not shabby.
That's pretty good.
Really impressed that folks, people navigated the URL enough to donate that much is really, really, I'm already overwhelmed. Thank you. And the only podcast I've mentioned it on so far is this one. I'm going to mention it on my other podcast this week. So this is all Filmcast listeners. So thank you, Filmcast. Now, it's going to be a little easier because Thanks to, now here, I'm going to tell you a little story.
Yeah, tell a story, Jeff.
Tell a story. My co-hosts, you may know them as Devendra and Dave. They made fun of me quite a lot for not doing the bare minimum of coming up with an easily expressible URL to let mm-hmm. this be, you know, easy for you folks to help.
Technology that's existed for decades. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. 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 Yep. Yeah. Yep. The, yep. Like literally the bare minimum effort to, yeah. you know, I got the vanity URL, but you know, I could have actually made it easy.
You could have taken 30 seconds to make the process 10x easier for a listener to access yes. it. Yes.
So, you know, just pulling the curtain back a little bit, we have a Google page, a little a document that we fill in for the show every week with our weekly plug yeah. so that Dave can easily put it in the show notes.
Jeff, stop. I want people to think we extemporize everything.
And the guys noticed on the weekly plugs this week that I actually had a short, easily expressible URL for you folks to easily donate to this cause. And they both congratulated me for actually doing it. And I'm about to reveal I didn't. I literally got a text from a very generous listener who was like, Jeff, I'm doing this for
you. Thank you. Thank you, listener.
It's yeah. R3V on Twitter. Thank you, R3V.
Mm, thank you.
Reached out and said, hey, here's a URL. So, ladies and gentlemen, all you need to do is go to bit.ly/runjeffrun. So bit.ly/runjeffrun. And you can get right there to my Providence fundraising page and help support. Literally, any amount is appreciated. $1, $5, $10, whatever you want to throw onto the pile. Trying to get to $12,000 for Providence Cancer Institute. These are folks that are working specifically on prostate cancer and research and trying to prevent that. So I think it's a very good cause, and it is going to motivate me as I'm running in the middle of the night, dark at 4 o'clock in the morning, having had only an hour of sleep and wishing that I had not made this decision. Wow. Your efforts will help me keep on trucking. So thank you, R3V, for making it easy for folks. And thanks for anybody that's able to help out at bit.ly/runjeffrun.
I have to say, Jeff, good luck with this whole thing. Because I think last time, didn't you like sprain an ankle?
Oh, yes. It was terrible. Yes.
That's you want to repeat that. Okay. But thank you also for proving that we can always rely on the kindness of internet strangers. You did it, Jeff.
Incredible.
Once again.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
If I'm lazy enough, somebody will support me.
I think they call that moral hazard in the insurance world. But yeah, Jeff, you didn't technically do the least amount possible, because the least amount possible would have been mentioning it on the podcast.
That's right. But, I did something.
You did literally the thing that was right above that, which is somebody else made the bit.ly link, and then you mentioned it on the podcast. So congratulations, Jeff.
I am the beneficiary of others' kindness, as I have been for my whole life, and I am grateful for that. But hey, I am going to do the running part, which is not an insignificant part. You know, that's a big part.
Speaking of the kindness of strangers, I want to thank all the people at patreon.com/filmpodcast for supporting the show. Sign up for ad-free episodes and exclusive After Darks. Of course, we never want anyone to donate if it in any way causes them financial hardship. You know what a really great way to support the podcast is? Subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/@thefilmcastpod. It's completely free. We get those YouTube numbers up, we can start selling ads on those videos. Right. And that would help us out. youtube.com/@thefilmcastpod. Subscribe over there. We'd really appreciate it. All right. That's weekly plugs. Let's get to our review of The Little Mermaid.
You broke the rules. You went to the above world.
A man was drowning. I had to save him.
This obsession with humans has to stop.
I just want to know more about them.
Ariel, don't!
Poor child.
I can help you. You can't live in that world unless you become a human yourself.
Is that even possible?
It's what I live for.
Welcome to the Filmcast review of The Little Mermaid, the new movie directed by Rob Marshall. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. A young mermaid makes a deal with a sea witch to trade her beautiful voice for human legs so she can discover the world above water and impress a prince. Now, end quote. Now, I'm going to start by saying, typically we have a spoiler section for our reviews. This movie, The Little Mermaid, is obviously based off of a classic animated film. Everyone knows the plot of that movie, or most people do. So we will not have a spoiler section. You should assume that this entire review will contain spoilers for The Little Mermaid, and that includes differences between the movie and the original animated film. So it's full spoilers right from the jump. Now, I'm going to kick this off by saying that I have disliked, if not outright hated, virtually every single one of these Disney remakes, live action remakes.
Jungle Book was okay. I think Jungle Book was the more successful one, but yeah.
It's not that I have found them completely devoid of any artistic merit whatsoever. And oftentimes, the things that they spawn, like derivative works, you know, like mm-hmm. Beyoncé's work for The Lion King, like stuff that comes out of it is very valuable and worthwhile. But I find them to be mostly intellectually and artistically bankrupt. Often just recreating stuff from before, but in a shittier fashion. And I was going into this movie expecting to outright hate it, but to be impressed by Halle Bailey playing playing Ariel, and in fact I was. But I have to say, this is actually my favorite one out of all the remakes. Like,
really?
I actually really liked The Little Mermaid, and the biggest reason I liked it is because there's actually a take. Like, this movie, in my opinion, justifies itself as being a remake because it actually adds substantially to the original story in ways that are not always successful, but are at least at the very least interesting. So I'm going to start off by saying I thought Halle Bailey was amazing. She's like worth seeing this movie for her alone. But overall, I actually thought this was not terrible. And therefore, if you're looking for a decent remake of The Little Mermaid, I actually think you're well served by going to see this in theaters. Devinder Hardawar, I'm curious, what did you think of the little mermaid?
Yeah. Before you go, how would you describe the take?
Specifically, if you watched The Little Mermaid and you thought to yourself, I really wish I knew more of Prince Eric's backstory, then you will get... you will be richly rewarded when you watch The Little
Mermaid. That's the take. What is the take?
Yeah. I think that there are a bunch of little meaning, like little changes that when added up are like somewhat meaningful. So Prince Eric, like he gets a lot more screen time and a lot more backstory in this movie. But also like his goals are made much more clear. Like there's this kind of fairly anodyne, you know, generic idea of like, I want our people, this country, to explore more, to be out there, to be open-minded to people. That's like not really nearly as present or well-developed in the original movie. And obviously, in terms of representation, you know, this movie is much more progressive. You see mermaids of all different kinds in this movie. And
indeed.
You know,
talk about those differences or, you know, anything.
Really. So, and some of the lyrics have been changed as well, which I can get into in a bit, but yeah. So like together, all these things kind of make it like, give it a little bit more of a progressive message, Jeff, I would say. It's not like the most amazing take. I'm not like, you know, wow, what a revolutionary way to take the story. It's just kind of like, okay, this is like evolved enough that it's not just like, you know, mindlessly repeating all the stuff that happened in the animated film. Did I answer your question?
No.
Okay.
Fair. I think we'll get to what I thought, but defining that as a take is a bit generous, but that's your purview to do.
That's completely fair. You know, I mean, right from the opening scene when Eric is like in, I'm like, wow, this is new. This is fresh.
Right. The man swinging on a rope.
Swinging on a rope on a Disney adventure, in, you know, on a ship.
Yeah. Like, what is this? Pirates of the Caribbean?
Okay, okay. I already can sense how this review is going to go. Devendra Hardwar, what did you think of The Little Mermaid?
I mean, I'm going to say up front, we are not the core market for this movie.
Correct.
Or for this remake. So, yeah, I'll put this out there. I think for my daughter, just saw the original Little Mermaid. She loves it. And she wants to see more. And she wants to see that follow-up sequel, which I actually never saw. But all the 90s like Disney stuff, I watched obsessively as a kid. So that it is a part of my life, too. I think kids will enjoy this movie. You know, I think it's perfectly serviceable, except for the fact that it is way too long. It is 45 minutes longer than the original. It has no justification
so much,
for
it is so much longer
so
than
long.
The original.
I was just like,
all
I was
that Eric,
struggling.
That's where all the Eric stuff went.
All the Eric stuff. Yeah. He's not like the actor is not really giving us much there. Like, sure, we get more backstory, but I could care less about him because he's giving me nothing. But this movie, like you said, Dave, like Halle Bailey. Yeah, it's fantastic. Like there's a moment when she's singing Part of Your World, right? Where just kind of like the sound design shifts for her, or maybe that's just her voice. I don't know. But there's a point where my theater just like erupted with her vocal range. And it just like, it kind of blew me away, and she is fantastic, and she gives a lot of great energy here. Yeah,
I got chills.
Chills.
Chills watching Halle Bailey sing Part of This World, and it's like, not many movies can give me chills. Like, so it's just like, even if it did that, that's already like better than, you know, most movies, right?
But
so,
that is one aspect of a 2 hour and 15 minute long movie. So
it is a 2.5 minute song in a 2.5 hour long
what
movie.
What we also get is David Diggs. Sebastian, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. You were, you know, what was he? He was in Hamilton, like playing, what was he, Lafayette, right? Like he was playing high energy roles. What did they do to Sebastian? Just like his song. I listened to that song pretty much, like actually several of his songs every night during bath time. No energy, like
when you said you listened to his song, you're talking about Under the Sea. Is that what you're talking about? Or
talking about Under the Sea? I'm talking about Kiss the Girl.
Yeah.
Bath Time. Those are Bath Time.
So you listen to the original version.
Yes.
Not the David Diggs versions. Yes.
Okay. I listened to the originals, and I forget the name of that actor. Actually, I should look that up. But that there was always a sense of like actual energy and presence. And I don't know. I feel like David Diggs was doing so much work trying to keep the Caribbean accent going that he could not devote that energy to the song. So not great. I have issues with the way all the animals look is just kind of freakish. Just Flounder. Again, what did they do to my boy? He looks like he's supposed to be colorful, but he's like a sickly, sickly pale vomit yellow. I don't know what's going on there.
I also find most of the sea creatures
freakish.
Pretty grotesque.
Freakish.
And my favorite bit is when Ariel is above ground and Flounder is just trying to talk to her, he's like constantly like kind of bobbing up and down.
We're like flapping while he's like,
there's one sequence
air.
Where he like goes into the ship.
Yeah.
And Sebastian's like, you are literally going to die in this conversation. You insane person.
It's Samuel
E. Wright played the original Sebastian.
Samuel E. Wright.
Iconic.
Love his voice.
Performance. Yeah.
Love his voice. Yeah, the animals don't work. There is a new song here, which different.
There's a couple new songs.
Okay.
And I will I will say one of them was pretty great. And there's actually like part of this world
Scuttlebutt.
Reprise, and then there's Scuttlebutt, which is like
Scuttlebutt is like, hey, we also heard Hamilton.
I mean, Lin-Manuel also
Miranda
worked.
Like wrote the music.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, you can certainly tell.
We meaning the filmmakers or something.
Yes. Yes.
I think this movie looks ghastly, like just awful at the beginning too. And this is people are getting a lot of complaints or complaining about the early footage and the trailers because like there's no color to the underwater stuff. It's just all like very modern lighting and everything. And I was worried the entire movie was going to be like that. And it's not. They do add some color later on. There's a scene like in a town full of color. Oh my God. I thought this movie was afraid of color, but no, once you get under the sea, no color, like nothing really going on.
So,
yeah.
So I think that's actually like kind of intentional, right?
I'm sure.
But you're right that in the animated film, under the sea and like above the ground, they look the same. In the movie, under the sea looks really dark and crappy.
I'm sure that's more realistic. I also don't give a shit. Give me the color. I want to see my animals. I want to see all the colors of Under the Sea.
Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to just defend this one, and then I will not bring this up again. Is The clips of this movie being posted online have been completely roasted because they look so terrible. I will say, it looks better on a movie screen than on a computer screen. Because the computer screen looks so dark. But in a movie screen, it's the brightest thing in the room.
Assuming you get good projection and everything. But even then, the iconic like Little Mermaid moment with Ariel on the rock, like in the waves behind her, looks like garbage. It looks
not great
compared to like the lush color that lives in our memories that we've watched 1,000 times from the 90s. So I think this movie looks awful. I think most of the other cast, like Prince Eric, he has more stuff to do. Except the guy is just like a nothing, a big nothing burger. And it's really all Halle Bailey like trying to like give some energy to that relationship. It's too long. I guess I like Javier Bardem. He's kind of fun and regal. But even then, like they didn't really do much with him, which is the thing. So Halle Bailey's great. Isn't she great? She's so great. I feel like I will enjoy the watching the music videos to this thing, but I never want to see this movie again.
Jeff Cannata, so curious what you thought of The Little Mermaid.
Well, Dave, I guess you could say what I thought of The Little Mermaid 2023 is best summed up in the form of a limerick. The visual effects are strong, but the movie feels much too long. Even under the sea, it will always be just an overpriced cover song.
Ooh.
Okay.
It's hard to review these, man. I feel like in a certain respect, I could review this movie without seeing it. Because exactly what I expected is what it was. And I will say it is a lavish, at times dazzling, at times fun, entirely disposable product.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't exist but for the fact that it's a cover of something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this before, I think when we reviewed these other ones, this does not happen. This movie doesn't have any autonomy. It doesn't exist independent of its predecessor. I kept thinking like, you know, I'll go to a play and see somebody else do Hamlet.
Right.
I'll go see a David Mamet play I've seen 50 times. I'll go see American Buffalo and just see how the new actors handle it. I love that experience. We watched West Side Story and we're like, how is Steven Spielberg going to do West Side Story?
Right. Great experience.
Yes. That's not the experience of these movies for me. Even though, as I will agree with you guys and heap praise on Halle Bailey, who is fantastic, and her covers of these songs have a spirit and an identity that are hers. And I love that for them. Like I love them for that, excuse me. Because I think she does a beautiful job with them. And I think, you know, seeing her rendition of it is interesting. But the movie itself, there is no universe where somebody setting out to make this movie for the first time without having ever made the animated version would make this.
Mm.
It wouldn't happen. You would not have photorealistic animals talking in this movie because it makes no sense whatsoever. it doesn't, there's no explanation for that. Like I wanted there to be a scene at the end where Ariel's like, we are going to meld our peoples and you will learn about merfolk and surface folk and we will move forward. Also, there's talking animals. You should be aware of that too. You
know? All animals actually talk, yeah.
But even weirder than that, I think in the context of this movie, the animals don't talk because there's one moment.
I know what you're talking about.
Yes, yeah. Where the bird, Scuttle, is talking away and the 1 second of the movie cuts to her just going, quack, 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 quack. And I was like, what?
I know.
Is the movie communicating to me the fact that only Ariel hears them talking?
I think it's like mer people can speak.
Only
to
mer
animals.
People can understand the animals. That was my interpretation of that. Yeah.
Right. That's bonkers. That makes it weirder, right?
Yeah.
Why does it make it weirder, Jeff?
Because now
they're basically part animal, is the thing.
Yeah, they're part animal.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So all animals can talk
it's
to each
simple.
Other.
It's very simple, Jeff.
And sing.
Yeah.
And so all the time when he's like, la 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 kiss the girl. There's no community. He's literally like,
no.
Yeah,
that's why Prince Eric like did not get the message throughout the entire song. Everyone shouted and kissed the girl.
I don't know. Spoiler alert, Jeff. He did not successfully kiss,
not
the girl
kiss the girl
in the scene.
He tried a bunch of times. This movie wouldn't be made like this.
I agree.
If it was a live action adaptation of the Hans Christian Andersen tale.
Sea animals are some of the least facially expressive creatures in the world.
Yes.
They made a realistic crab, and those things look freakish.
It makes no sense.
And I wish they had the gut. I mean, obviously, see, what they're doing is creating a fan service movie to a better movie, which it makes no sense to me, other than, like, they make shit tons of money, so I guess that makes sense.
Do you want to make $1 billion, Jeff? But I think they want to make $1 billion.
The bold take on this would have been literally figure out ways to do it without any talking animals. Like, literally make the story about a mermaid and a man falling in love and figure out ways to do it without talking anthropomorphized sea creatures. Like, that would have been cool. That would have been a take.
Yeah. Wouldn't have been Disney, though, is the thing.
I see.
Like, all they want to do is like rebuild their things. I feel the same way about this movie as I kind of feel about the Mario movie. Like the Mario movie more, but this is completely safe in all the ways you exactly expect from a Disney movie. Even with like, okay, it's amazing to have a black Ariel. It's amazing to see more people of color. This movie does not engage with any of those ideas at all. Like Prince Eric's adopted mother is also black. We're not talking about it.
There is an Asian boy mermaid.
Yes.
At the end. Which made me kind of lose my mind because I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen an Asian mermaid before.
I mean, I think, I don't know. I guess I'm from an era where like that's cool. That's cool. Like talk about it. It's normal. It's a normal thing. It's normal to have things that look, you know, people that are all multicultural just be part of the story.
If you can normalize it in a certain way, but I also feel like it is, to me, it reads as doing the least amount of effort possible. Mm-hmm. And what happens too is like Halle Bailey was basically left out to dry because people have just been attacking her because she's Ariel. If you go look at the IMD ratings of this movie, people have been downvoting this movie to hell because they didn't want to see a black Ariel. And like this movie it sucks. But I do feel like these companies tend to trot out these characters like this and be like, hey, diversity. Look at this scene at the end.
Yeah.
Diversity. I think
the communication is to children. Like, look, this is the world, how the world looks.
Yes,
and
true,
this is, there's no reason to point at it because why would we point at it?
There's a lot of great writing from writers I enjoy, like Candace Frederick. I believe she's at Huffington Post, and Angelica Jade Bastian. Like they all point out, like just like it. This doesn't seem like it's enough. I do want to live in the world where you don't have to talk about it. It can be just so it can be accepted. But also, they don't even talk about the accepting of that fact. Like that's my main.
Yeah, thing. Well, because movies like this basically take place in a post-racial world.
Right.
Like race is not commented on explicitly at any point in this in this movie. To the extent that it is, the metaphor is that, you know, like people, like someone of a different species is like, you know, there's something bold to the idea that he's like,
maybe you shouldn't hate other people.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't hate other people that look different. You know, that's the full existence.
But that is the ultimate take. And I'm like, yes. Thank you, Disney.
But it's kind of like it's fairly toothless, in my opinion, as a take, as a message, in my opinion, because they do so little to comment on it. Also, like it's noted in the story that Eric is adopted and he has a black mom, and that's never like commented on. It's just kind of like
his caretaker is an older Indian man who I think he's the prime minister, but is he in a relationship with the mom? I'm very confused about that. But
I don't think so.
Or they just working together?
Well, they kind of like at the end, they kind of got together a little bit.
They kind of got together. I don't know.
But I was like, I was thinking
there's
like,
no boner. That's one thing that they changed from the first movie. The little boner that happens. I remember watching that many, many times. The little boner that happens at the end.
I do not remember this.
What?
But okay.
You guys don't know about the boner?
No.
Oh, there's so many penises in The Little Mermaid? Guys?
I wouldn't be
so
surprised.
So many penises.
I would not be surprised.
I was thinking about how, like, this idea of Eric and Ariel getting together at the end in some ways mirrors like kind of what happened in the real world. Excuse me, what happened in the real world with Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, but like the obviously big difference, and she experienced like a lot of like racism coming into this long entrenched institution. But obviously the big difference is in this movie, Eric's mom is black and part of the power structure. So it's just, I just don't think the movie really comments on it at all. And you know, there's advantages and disadvantages of that approach, right? Advantages and disadvantages of the post-racial approach to these kinds
of things. A lot of things you don't talk about. Like, oh, this is a movie with like a royal kingdom in the Caribbean, I guess, like with a black leader, except
unnamed Caribbean islands.
Unnamed Caribbean,
right?
Except the entire history of the Caribbean is one that is like it exists because of slavery and because of like all the colonial power structures too. So it's
exactly
It's better if we don't talk about that.
Yeah,
it's better if we don't talk about
exactly.
That. So they just have a fantasy.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't. I mean, I don't think this is a part of Earth. But you know what I mean.
Well, the thing that you know, the part. Yes, you're right. It's not a part of Earth. It's kind of this fantasy world. But the thing that really kind of felt weird to me was when Ariel transforms back into a mermaid at the wedding, and that was like a legitimately awesome scene. I thought, like, because it's heartbreaking that the kiss doesn't happen, but then also the woman who plays like different Ursula, she just starts like screaming maniacally.
Yeah. She turns into a horror movie character.
It's like a horror movie, and I was like, holy shit, this is frightening.
Yep.
There's a lot of the movie that's frightening, in my opinion. I thought a lot of it is very intense for
Kaiju Ursula.
Yeah, Kaiju Ursula.
We even talked about Melissa McCarthy, who I thought was great.
I thought she's awesome.
So great. Like,
really
she's kind
great,
of
really great.
She's kind of channeling Bette Midler a bit, and in an awesome way. And I don't know. I thought every time she was on screen, I was like, oh, she's having a blast. The way they animated her was awesome. I thought it was really cool.
She had a good look and like good comedic timing, but I feel like the songs again didn't quite live up to what we had. Like, you can't give me something less, because then it does just feel like a cover. You know, all the songs felt like covers except for what Halle Bailey was doing. Like, felt like she was doing more. Yeah.
Well, on the topic of the songs, there have been some significant changes to the songs, and I just think it's hard to have a progressive movie where the protagonist doesn't speak for half the movie. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, the protagonist is a woman that doesn't speak for half
That's always been the hard part about watching little movies.
But the original Kiss the Girl song is a little bit rapey. The lyrics go, "It don't take a word, not a single word. Go on and kiss the girl." That's the original lyrics. But they wanted to change it so that it's not,
it takes a lot of words and it, maybe a contract, kiss the girl.
I mean, I think, you know, I take the idea of consent extremely seriously, and so like I think that I'm glad that they do it, but it's also just weird because she can't speak during the whole time. So it's, you know, I'm not saying the changes are not better, but it's just odd because
I think the way Ariel acts in this movie is more like self-possessed. Like, she knows what she wants. She is doing things like that. I like that the horse carriage ride where she's just like, oh, I want to have fun, I want to do this, and she's like going on adventure and being a little reckless and stuff, but she has more of a personality than cartoon Ariel did, I think, and more of an idea of what she wants. It's not just about her pining after a guy.
Exactly. By the way, the new words are, use your words, boy, and ask her. That's what it says in the new song. So
it fit in really nicely.
There were some great scenes of Ariel. Like, I think in this movie versus the animated film, it's a lot more about Ariel being into the human world as opposed to just loves this dude, right? And I actually really love that scene where she goes into like Eric's room and there's all this shit everywhere. And she's like looking at it, and like when she starts like spinning the globe, like this wonder in this character's face, I thought it was really special.
She doesn't really love him. She's just with him for all the human stuff, you know, all the trinkets. Yeah.
I like this movie. Like, I was, because I saw all the clips online and they looked awful. And I was just like, I dislike every single one of these remakes, but I actually was like surprised that I was like, oh, there's actually some really nice moments. The other thing I want to shout out is they add kind of these reprise moments to Ariel at the end, like where she sings like kind of like chunks of the Part of Your World song, like later on in the movie. I don't recall that being in the animated film, but there's this moment when she's like, you know, talking about what she gave up to like be part of this world that like rejected her, that it was like legitimately heartbreaking. So there's just a lot of like great moments in this movie that I liked. I'm not saying it's awesome. I think I am very sympathetic to everything you're saying, Jeff, about it's just a cover version and like it feels in some way soulless, but
I mean, I honestly, I agree with you a lot in that I think it's my favorite of these.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of that is Halle Bailey and just like how much fun it is to watch a human person knock these songs out of the park and like, you know, and I think the visual effects, I was just marveling at the fact that we can make these, we can make Little Mermaid with photorealism.
The mermaids look good. Like, I actually think like they got, first of all, like the hair, everyone has like, in my opinion, very photorealistic looking hair. That like floats in water, and I'm sure it took like hundreds of hours of animation to get all the hair right. The mermaids move in a realistic fashion through the water. I'm like, oh, this is like
It's really amazing. Yeah, I couldn't help though but compare this to Avatar: The Way of Water, and where I'm never in doubt that those creatures are actually underwater at any point in Avatar.
Yeah,
and I think that's a testament to Cameron being like, we're going to replace you digitally completely, but we're also going to really be going underwater to do this, you know? And I didn't believe at any point that anybody was underwater.
Because they're talking, you know, like, sure. it doesn't make sense that they could talk. Also, like Scuttle, the bird, flies underwater and is talking for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that conversation, she's like, well, I got to go get some air now.
Gotta get some air.
Yeah.
I guess that explains everything, you know, like.
Yeah. I think the bigger issue, you know, having said that, I think this is the best of these, you know, photorealistic remakes. There is no universe where I feel like, hey, let's watch The Little Mermaid and we're going to pick this one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
You will watch the Halle Bailey music videos.
Yeah.
And then, watch
on YouTube,
movie.
You will watch like her perform the songs on YouTube. Yeah. Like, that's a great, you know, thing to do. But yeah, I would agree that, that you're not choosing this one. Like when you're showing your children The Little Mermaid, you're going to show them the animated.
Also, when you're a parent, you're like, I want the 90-minute movie. I want to be in and out.
Yeah.
Okay. Not the 2+ hour.
So crazy.
Epic. It does nothing to justify that length either. Oh my God.
I am very glad I was planning to take my kids to see this and it didn't work out and I had to go by myself. And I was sitting next to a woman who brought two kids very young and they left twice and came back.
I had a family in my theater like leave halfway through the movie because it's
so they left and came back twice
for bathroom stuff.
Yeah, bathroom. You're gonna go with the kids. You know,
a couple of other changes I want to point out that happened. First of all, I don't know if you guys recall, but there was a French chef in the original Little Mermaid that killed sea animals. chopped up a bunch of sea animals. They just completely eliminated that character from the movie entirely.
I totally forgot this moment that I couldn't believe they put in the movie.
Yeah.
So we start in the movie, Ariel hanging out with Sebastian. Sebastian's like, you're swimming too fast. No, 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 no. And then we're introduced to Scuttle by Scuttle coming down and grabbing a fish and then going, sorry, guys, I needed a snack. And I was like, that is the most horrific. Like, we just fell in love with little Sebastian and you just ate his friend.
It's always
the craziest thing.
There's always this weird, we talked about this, what was the other movie recently that had talking animals, but there's always this weird caste system in these movies where there's animals that can talk.
Right.
And Guardians of the Galaxy, that's what it was.
Sure.
Where there's animals that can talk and animals that can't. And the ones that can't, they are not worthy of our consideration and love. So in this case,
they're food. Scuttle,
Scuttle's food or the shark. Remember that shark that attacked Ariel? Can't be reasoned with, that person. That shark can't be reasoned with.
So I would buy that sharks are like a vicious animal in this context. Mm-hmm. Like they're just mean and predatory. Mm-hmm. But the fish was literally like, we just were hanging out with, I mean, it's in front of Sebastian.
Just an innocent fish.
Scuttle, it would be like a scene where like your friend comes in and just shoots another human being in front of you and be like, sorry. Oh, hey, what's
starts
up?
Starts eating him. Starts eating their entrails. Yeah.
All this stuff is really, with animals is really upsetting in this movie. You know, like you pointed out the scene where Flounder is on the thing and he's still talking.
Yeah.
Flounder's on the boat. At one point, Flounder gets onto a ship and he's still talking and it's like, but he's like doing the flappy up and down motion. It's like, Flounder, are you freaking choking for air? Are you choking?
And Sebastian says, we got to get you back in the water. And it's like,
but Flounder doesn't even seem like he understands that anything is wrong. he's like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
What is going on here? Okay, a couple of other changes I want to point out. I actually like the scene where Ariel goes into the market and, like,
it's a great scene.
Just behaves completely erratically,
eats the flour,
like, eating the flour and doing all this weird ass stuff. Like, that was a lot of fun. The amnesia was a new thing. I thought there was, like, such a half baked element of the plot. Was like,
you can't remember that you need to kiss him.
Yeah. In the movie, she has amnesia, but that's not true in the animated film.
I think that kind of fills a plot hole, because otherwise,
right?
Because
why doesn't she just go up and kiss him?
That's just that it has to be from true love. You can't just smack somebody on the lips.
Exactly. So it's just like, but they almost like half-heartedly introduced it. They're like, I guess you don't remember me. It's like, what? Like, why are you introducing this plot thread at this point? So that was a little bit weird. And then, of course, Devendra, as you point out, it's Kaiju Melissa McCarthy at the end. But Melissa McCarthy is an octopus, whereas I think in the original she is more of like a squid-esque creature.
Sure. Octopuses are scarier.
I thought that was not great. I just have to say.
The Kaiju part?
It looked cool.
I thought it was incredible.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't think it looked good. Like, I thought Melissa McCarthy looked amazing throughout the whole movie, because it blended her octopus body with the rest of her really well. And then by the time they get to the end, it's like, oh, this is just gigantic CG thing. That was
I couldn't believe how good it. I thought it. It I just was looked blown good. Away by how. Yeah. I've never seen a giant actor feel like they were actually giant before. Mm-hmm. It was really amazing. I thought
it felt like, again, a scene from Pirates of the Caribbean or something, like something you would expect from those movies. And actually, I think there were a few of those scenes. By the way, Flounder, played by Jacob Tremblay. I'm really going to miss it when Jacob Tremblay does not sound like a child anymore, because, like, he is running out of that time. Like, is there a Haley Joel Osment situation going on where we see Jacob Tremblay in 10 years? Like, what happened? I remember when you were a kid. You were adorable. Yeah. I thought he sounded good. I just wish Flounder didn't look so freakish, you know?
Yeah, and I feel
a little
like
freak.
I feel like Sebastian and Flounder got less to do in this. Like, I didn't go back and, like, do a scene by scene comparison, but I just felt like they didn't have much to do in this movie. And and I almost feel like one out of those three characters is probably unnecessary between Scuttle and
100%.
And Flounder. And,
I think there should be a rule. I mean, I love Awkwafina. I think she's a delight. Very funny. There needs to be
Awkwafina
a rule.
Limiter. Yeah.
You can only be one iconic animated character. You get to pick.
Yeah.
But if you're one iconic animated character and you have a very distinct, if you're doing a voice, okay, fine, do a different voice. But if it's just your iconic voice, you got to pick. You can't be.
What's the other one that she was?
The dragon one.
Right.
The last dragon.
Right. Yeah. Got it.
She's great in both of them, but it's like, you can't. That's not fair. Can't do
She's
that.
Everywhere. Awkwafina is everywhere.
Yeah.
Only other thing I want to mention is
Raya, the last dragon.
Yeah. Only other thing I want to mention is King Triton gets a little bit more backstory. We find out that humans killed his wife. That was apparently part of canon, but not in the original movie.
And also a weird detail to throw in that makes things way more complicated, but nobody deals with.
Oh, they don't address it at all. But here's the thing. Everything King Triton says is true in this movie. Humans are dangerous. They don't give a crap about the ocean. They're going to pollute it and destroy it. And it's like, hey, that's actually absolutely correct. Yes. Hashtag King Triton did nothing wrong. You know, like, I think he is
also
one of the more sympathetic characters in the film.
His death is pretty horrific for little kids. Like, he gets straight up killed. And then they bring him back. But it's like, that is a pretty rough looking death.
He's like, he's like starts like wasting away,
it's like
almost
desiccated. You know,
Yeah. So anyway, it sounds like this is one of your favorite ones. Devendra, it sounds like you like Jungle Book at least more than this one.
I like Jungle Book more. Yeah. But Halle Bailey, good stuff.
Yeah, she's great. So I am as surprised as you guys. I went into this movie expecting I would like take a bat to this movie and not think it was anything worthwhile, but it's like, hey, they tried.
What does Disney do though?
They did some stuff.
Once they are done remaking all the iconic 90s stuff, like, what do they do? Come up with something new?
They're going to go back into they're going to find the Disney animated equivalent of the Eternals, you know, and like put that out there.
Yeah, they're going to do Emperor's New Groove live action.
Yeah.
I mean, that movie deserves a reckoning.
There already is a Lilo and Stitch kind of in the works. And so, so there's a lot of.
That's true. That is happening.
I think we're not going to run out for a while. Is my sense, Devendra.
No, it's pretty. We're getting there, though. Like, what is left? from the 90s. They did Aladdin. They did Lion King.
There's got to be the Aristocats.
They did Beauty and the Beast.
The Aristocats, you know.
That's much older.
Yeah, it is much older.
But, you know.
I'm talking peak 90s era Disney. We're running out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
They're going to make their billions, and it's going to be what? Like Harry Potter turning into a super long series at some point for something, one of these stories. I don't know.
They don't own Harry Potter.
No, I'm saying like bringing back Harry Potter now as a super long HBO series.
It'll be the equivalent of that. This is going to be a Little Mermaid like TV show on Disney Plus, perhaps.
Something.
One day. We'll see.
Yeah.
But anyway. Well, at the end of the day, despite everything that some of us may have said, it's really impressive that Rob Marshall made a movie. All right, folks, that's going to bring us into this week's episode of the podcast. You can find more episodes at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes courtesy of Tim McEwen from The Midnight. Check out his new band, Varsity Blue. Our spoiler bumper and weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross. This episode was edited by me, David Chen. Video editing and assistance provided by John Barry and Kurt Mega. Next week on the podcast, it's going to be Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Really looking forward to this one. Some of the reviews have been really positive. We should have a fun guest for that one as well. So look forward to that, folks. Hope you have a great week. Thank you so much for listening to the Filmcast. And until next time, we'll see you later. Goodbye.